Lori Kripp. She's my guest today. She is the Dean of Social Science. So welcome, and thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you for having me. It's great.
And we're going to learn all about the Social Sciences Division at Howard Community College. We are going to learn from Laura what you guys do, and the programs and the different opportunities and why somebody should consider coming to the Social Sciences Division. But before we go into all of that, I always like to get to meet my guests. I always like to get to know their stories a little bit, what inspired them to go into the field where they are today and how they got to HCC. So Laura, if you can tell us a little bit about yourself, that'd be wonderful.
So how I got to HCC is a little bit of a big story, but I'll try and condense it. I'm a first generation university attendee. And so my parents were really sort of supportive of me going to university. And I think I just picked archaeology because I knew I liked history and going on hikes around the British countryside and finding archaeological sites. My dad often did that with me. And in hindsight, if I'd have thought about how much archaeologists get paid in the UK, I probably wouldn't have picked it as a degree, but I'm really glad I did. Because long story short, I ended up being able to get support and funding to do graduate work in the area and then ended up falling into teaching, really. And it was actually on a dig, on an excavation that I was supervising during my PhD, that I met a group of American students who came out from Dickinson College in Pennsylvania. And my now husband was one of them, but he wasn't actually with Dickinson College. He was with Howard Community College. So he had managed to somehow jump onto their study abroad. So I met him there and we stayed friends over the course of about 3 years. He came and did another dig with us. And ultimately, we started dating after one Thanksgiving trip when I was about 25 and he was a couple of years younger. And then I decided to move out here once I finished my PhD. So yeah, it's a weird circle of events that brings me to HCC.
It's a love story. You're the first person that has a love story intertwined in, you know, how you got to HCC and all of that. I love it. I love it. And you mentioned something there. You said you're the first generation in your
my immediate family. I have extended family members who've gone to university before, but no one in my immediate family. So it was a new thing for everyone in my family, pretty much. And then since then, my middle sister went back to get a degree, and my mum semi-retired and went back to get a degree, and she got her history degree from Oxford University at about 65 years old.
That is beautiful. Wow, that's a great story. And I wasn't planning on going there, but if you're okay with that, maybe we can talk a little bit about that, because I think for many of our students at HCC, that is their story. You know, they are the first generation who's going into university or college, and that is an experience in itself, you know, regardless of everything else. And if we can forget education for a moment, right, if we can forget about everything else, academia, that experience on its own is quite unique. So could you maybe talk a little bit about, you know, what your experience was like and how that maybe helps you and shapes you when you are at HCC and when you're dealing with students who are in that same story?
You know, I think it's the community college ethos. You know, the thing about community colleges versus 4 years, and I actually worked after my PhD, I worked in a four-year university in the UK for a year at Reading University. I came over and I was actually part-time at HCC and at UMBC. During my PhD, I worked at the four-year that I was doing my PhD at. So I've taught in those environments. And the thing about community college is that we are an open access institution, which means that, you know, whatever your high school experience, whether you graduated with a GED or not, you can take the placement tests and you can come on in and you can start where you're placed, you know, where you're ready for, and then move forward. And by being an open access institution, it's not an exclusive place. We get students who have been accepted to 4 years but can't afford to go straight away. We get students who are returning back into the educational sort of arena. We get career changers. We get students for whom school has just really not been a great experience, but they're still looking to progress their futures and their education, and they're coming in and we meet them where they are. And it's a community. It's a community of college students. And the recognition that our students have challenges and hurdles, and that they've actually just, they've put so much effort in even just to get to this point and to be face to face with us, that recognition is something that unites staff and faculty at Howard Community College. You know, our mission is to provide pathways to success. And truthfully, of all the institutions I've ever worked at, and I've been at HCC for 13 years now, this is by far the institution that places student success at the very heart of everything we do. And if you can come up with an idea or a project that you can advocate for based on the idea that it will help students, you know that you will find traction for it at HCC. So it really is a place that has captured my heart. It's something that I think is a really unique facet to the very complicated American higher educational system. It mirrors a lot of what used to be called polytechnics in the UK. We had a similar structure, but for more sort of career technical areas. And I think if you go into different states, that's how the community college model sort of operates also. It's much more around career degrees. But actually in Maryland, and specifically at HCC, we are a primary transfer institution. We are a strong academic institution. It's a really unique sort of combination of that open access ethos, that ability to recognize how much students have gone through just to be coming through our doors, and then yet providing that kind of transition into whatever their dreams are as a next step. And for a lot of our students, it will be going to a 4-year, but for many others, it will be going into a career field in the health sciences, for example. For social sciences, we're pretty much all talking about transfer degrees, right? So if a student is in a social sciences major as their program of study, social sciences, criminal justice, or a general studies degree, those are being aligned and structured with the idea of a transfer into a 4-year program in mind, and then a career, or even into grad school and then a career.
So, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned some of the careers that fall under social sciences, because I don't think that it's a clear, you know, at least in my mind, I hear social sciences and I don't think that I have a clear idea of what are those career paths, right? And what does that look like? So let's define that. Let's define that a little bit.
Great. Well, about 5 years ago, we actually had a social sciences degree. It wasn't very popular because we had a degree for every one of the disciplines that falls into that area as well. And we actually condensed them into one degree because if you know a little about the structure of education in America, your junior college, community college, and your senior college, at the junior college for the first 2 years, you're really meant to be building up your foundation, your gen ed core, and your introductory classes. And then you specialize in your 4-year. And so what was happening is a student was signing up for an anthropology degree and then deciding they wanted to go to economics and then deciding they wanted to go to geography. And because all of those degrees looked quite different and our faculty were teaching what really was passionate, you know, to them in those degrees, students were earning more credits than they actually needed, therefore spending longer with us than they needed and spending more money than they needed to. And we saw that as a real problem. It's counter to the ethos that we've just been talking about. So we said, you know what? What we need, we're lucky in social sciences. If you want to do psychology or sociology or criminal justice or you know, geography, actually we can provide a 2-year degree that gives you a little bit of flexibility to focus on some disciplines in there. We call them clusters of courses. You can basically tailor a social sciences degree to where you want to go. And that way, if you change your mind halfway through, you're not changing degree. So it gives you your gen ed core, and then it tells you to take 9 to 12 credits in a certain discipline with a certain prefix. So if you think you might want to go to psychology, you'll pick 4 psych classes as part of your 2-year degree. If you think you want to go into economics, you'll pick econ. But again, it will allow you to major at the 4-year in whatever you want still, because you actually only need about 38 credits, upper level credits, in your degree topic in order to graduate. So if you did 60 credits following a psychology path and then change to econ, you've still got another 60 credits at the 4-year. And within those 60 credits, as long as you take 38 credits or more of econ, you can econ major. So it's a really flexible way of pursuing any of the social science majors. And those are, in our division, anthropology. We'll talk about criminal justice in a minute because it's actually technically a different degree program, but it's very similar to social sciences. So we have criminal justice, social sciences, and general studies as our 3 degree programs in our division. And then we also have education. My division is actually social sciences and teacher education. Education has its own pathway, a whole suite of degrees. We don't need to necessarily go there today, but that's an amazing set of programs and offerings there, but it's quite unique. So within social sciences, it's anthropology, political science, geography, sociology, psychology, history, all the ologies basically. Social work, conflict resolution, probably missed some. And then criminal justice has the criminal justice degree. So it's basically all of those ologies, what you may have studied in social studies at school, those are the social sciences degrees. And the math requirement for them is pretty much the same. It's statistics. Social scientists deal with numbers in a statistical way. So the math stays the same. The only variation is that if you want to study psychology at a four-year degree, as a four-year degree at College Park, they want you to have statistics and calculus. That's the only variation that we have in Maryland.
So. I think I'm going to call you the ology division now, from now
ologies,
on.
Ologies, yeah, we are the ologies.
You mentioned, a good number of different career paths that you can take. You mentioned anthropology, economics. So can we unpack maybe or highlight some of these? You know, what are maybe like the most popular ones, the ones that everybody knows about, or maybe ones that are unique to HCC? Mm-hmm. Some that maybe people don't consider that much, but you're like, you should really be looking into this because the way the market maybe is going, this is going to be, there's going to be a lot of need for people in this field.
So I think, you know, social sciences, first of all, is a great degree if you just don't know what you want to do. Social sciences as a whole looks at society, at people, about our current social justice issues. They look at how structures, organizational structures, political structures, and identity and humans and cultures and groups interact and operate. We study social problems. We study environmental and man, you know, interactions. So it's a good general broad degree. Okay, for working in a bank or working, you know, if you just don't know what you want to do, it's a good foundational degree. If you want to stay in the field of working with people, there are a lot of applied aspects to social sciences degrees. Psychology, psychologist, those are often doctorate degrees, but counselor, high school counselor, obviously that tailors nicely with education. We can do certificates in education. Social work is a master's level degree, but social work with social work master's with a sociology undergrad is a really common platform, and that helps. You can tailor then to adoption or marriage or alcohol abuse or whatever it is within social work. History and anthropology. Anthropology has a practical application in archaeology. It's not the best paid job in the world. You can ask me about that if you really want to, but history anthropology are connected. And again, they're more of those sort of broad general degrees. If you want to go into teaching, if you want to go into library work, a master's in library science, history is a really good foundation. They're great undergrads for law degrees because you have to do a lot of reading and a lot of writing. And that's often what you need for law degrees. And then you've also got like the geographies and the economics, which to be honest, are probably the ends of the social sciences spectrum where you're most likely to get better paid positions with government. The Census Bureau is constantly looking for economics graduates and geography graduates. Geography includes global information systems or geographic information systems, I should say, mapping with satellites. So those are our more kind of sciencey end. The social sciences, the econ and the geographies, and therefore you get a bit more access into some of that government work. Political science, we're in a great location in America for getting into political action, campaigning, nonprofits, NGOs, all of the ologies work to support the NGOs. It really is about careers that get you working with people and working within your community and looking to help improve people's lives. I would say that's what, you know, sort of unites a lot of our social sciences disciplines.
So, you know, you've mentioned a lot of different careers, but they all, as you started a conversation saying, you know, we've kind of like clustered them. And I can see how they all really interconnect. You're also talking about things that are really important, not just today, but, you know, always. I mean, politics, you've talked about social justice, you've talked about all of these different fields. So when a student comes to HCC and they know they want to make a difference, right? But they don't know exactly where and how that's going to be. Why should they consider coming to, you know, the social studies and take one of these ologies with you guys?
Yeah, don't just take one either, take several. You're going to find some themes around them. You're going to find themes of us really taking head on some of the real problems in America and in the world today. You know, we talk about institutional racism. We talk about gender equity. We talk about the murder of people. We talk about differential experience, right? That I always say in my anthropology class, one of the phrases I hate the most is, I totally get it. I totally hear you. Because that's not possible. We all live our own lived experiences, and my lived experience is different to yours. And while I can empathize, while I can try and place myself in your situation and build a construct in my head of what that may have felt like, to say I understand is blatantly false. And, you know, we can look at that in relation to differential racial experiences of racialization and racial injustice. We can look at it in terms of gender or transgender experience and injustice. You know, I don't know what someone else's true experience is, and the social sciences allow us to recognize that, embrace that, and then provide a framework for us to still be able to talk about issues in a respectful way that recognize the fact that my lived experience and your lived experience is exactly that. So we talk a lot about white privilege. There are, you know, we can talk a lot about those common themes. You know, obviously psychology lends itself more to the development of the brain and from, you know, childhood through death, whereas sociology and anthropology are going to look more at current social justice issues and the way in which cultures operate. And then the economics piece is going to look more at, you know, how societies and social structures you know, create meaning within a monetary economy and concepts of inflation and things like that. Geography will look more at that man-land interaction. So climate change is another big theme across a lot of our courses, and the social injustices that come around from climate change. So, you know, if a student is, as you said at the beginning of this, coming to HTC and saying, I want to make a difference, but I don't know where, the first place you should go is social sciences, to start learning about some of the big issues that people are tackling and some of the great ways in which communities come together to advocate, to work on the behalf of one another. Because, you know, we make up these institutions, but our voice within institutions is often underrepresented, right? So people within society, they vote, and through voting, they often put in place people who then build institutions that effectively shape our lived experience. But our voice isn't often present there. It has to come through other ways. And so social sciences work to help empower people's voices.
That's a beautiful way to describe what social sciences in a nutshell really is. But, you know, many of the things that you're talking about, it seems like there needs to be hands-on experience. It seems like, you know, just talking about it in the classroom or nowadays just posting your thoughts on social media, only takes you so far, right? So what are some of the ways that you guys enhance, you know, the learning experience and take this into that real world?
The applied experience piece is so vital. You know, in anthropology, we talk about armchair anthropologists, which is really not an anthropology. You know, in order to do any of these social science disciplines or criminal justice, it ultimately means that you're having to go out and apply your experience, your knowledge, your training to build, you know, a better sense of who it is you're talking about working with and what the issues are. So we do have a lot of courses that embed service learning opportunities. The Office of Service Learning does an amazing job with helping situate students with groups and with opportunities that provide them a real world, tenable access to a population or a justice issue. They do that through embedding service learning opportunities within classes, but also through the alternative spring breaks and the alternative winter breaks that you can apply for and go on to. So service learning pieces is very important there. Some of our more technical courses, geography and actually our archaeology course, we have equipment, we have practical equipment that you go out and use to map or to scan or to survey and things like that. In terms of history and sociology and a lot of our culture pieces, our faculty are really amazing at utilizing actual material objects, actual texts to enrich the classroom experience, to really give that kind of experiential component to the class. And then they are also very strong at delivering study abroad opportunities and working with our study abroad office. So our Office of International Education actually is the office that helps to create and run our opportunities to travel abroad with faculty on faculty-led excursions and experiences. We've got those in history for Italy. And I've taken 6 study abroads to France and Britain. We have study abroads in, or we had them in Ireland. We've got new ones coming up now. So, you know, to experience these monuments, these buildings, and the places that the history actually occurred is a really amazing opportunity. And then our faculty are also great at sort of bringing in more localized trips and speakers and things like that. So there's lots of ways in which our faculty can really engage students in more than just textbook learning. Even in a remote environment, it has to be said, they're still able to provide different mediums through which you can experience this material. And we're working on a lot more COIL, which is sort of online interactions with other places around the world. COIL opportunities embedded within our courses is something that our faculty are working on right now as well. So you can still get that international global exposure with other people from around the world. So that's great. So we've got a really talented set of faculty. A lot of them are PhD faculty. A lot of them could be teaching at other 4 years, but honestly believe in the ethos and the mission of Howard Community College and are published authors and a great, you know, sort of resource for our students.
You know, you mentioned something. You said, you know, I've been to all of these places, and usually when we go and travel places, we go as tourists, right? Mm-hmm. And it takes a certain... You have to be very intentional, I think, when you go to these places to really start thinking about the history and to really start connecting with that place in a much more deeper way than just, oh, how beautiful, right? Because that's what I've done. I go somewhere and I'm like, this is so pretty. This looks beautiful. But to get that full understanding of the history behind it and the people who built it and what happened in that place, it just takes it to a whole nother level, you know?
So travel for me is a way of exercising your brain to a degree that it can't possibly be exercised when you stay within your own location. And actually in the very sort of early parts of the anthropology courses I teach, we look at an article from a Dutch guy called Pico Iyer. And in this article, he talks about the purpose that it's called the philosophy of travel. If you want to look it up online, Pico Iyer, the philosophy of travel. And in that article, he talks about where the word travel comes from. It comes from the French travail, and the verb travail in French means to work. So travel is to work. It's to work at something so different for a short period of time that it gives you that contrast to your everyday. Now, what's so interesting is we often travel to places like Jamaica and we look around and we say, wow, look at this wonderful, beautiful landscape and all these great chilled out people who are just hanging out and just relaxed and playing cards and dice and things. But actually, when you look more deeply into it, you know, the unemployment rate in Jamaica is really high. And if you go off site of your tourist site, you're going to go into Kingston, you're going to see some real social issues at hand. A lot of people don't have that opportunity to work outside of their own. And, you know, it puts a different light on it for me that when you go traveling, it's actually your duty to work a bit at traveling. You should come back a bit tired, because if you don't come back tired and a bit mentally drained, then you haven't really maximized that opportunity. It comes from the word travail, and I think that's really important to remember. And there's also a great, to your point, there's a great YouTube video out there at the moment. About 2 years ago, a German in Berlin was fed up of seeing tourists do weird poses at their Holocaust memorial. So in Berlin, the Holocaust memorial is a series of very large granite standing stones, obelisks. And I've never been, I've only seen it from afar, so I'd have to look it up to see what the actual intentional meaning behind it was. I'm sure it represents lives lost, things like that, but I you know, don't take my word for it. But anyway, it's an amazing sculptural piece in the center of Berlin. And, you know, tourists were juggling alongside it or doing a yoga headstand by it or posing, you know, for their selfies by this Holocaust memorial. And so he said, okay, if you want to do that, then I will superimpose behind you images from the Holocaust to see how stupid you look. It's a YouTube clip where they actually had to email him to get to say sorry and ask for him to put it down. And he basically said, everyone, if you keep coming to Berlin and keep doing this stupid stuff in front of our memorial, that is a really meaningful thing and that you need to know about, then I will continue to post you in front of what it truly means and you'll continue to look like an idiot. And I think that's a really good example of what you've just illustrated. We need to use this as an opportunity for for self-growth and self-reflection. And
you know, they say history repeats itself, right? But I think maybe if we explore history a little deeper, maybe we can actually just not repeat it again. You know, if we did take the time, I don't know, that's just like a personal theory, I guess, of mine. If we took
it's
the time
one
to
of the
really
great
understand
debates. It's actually, you touch on one of the great debates in history is the extent to which we can say we learn from our mistakes in history. And different historians will argue different things, and some will say, no, look, time and time again, we make these same mistakes. But I think what you need, what is true is that you can't move forward into your future in an informed way if you don't know your history. So you may still make the same mistakes, but the very minimum that you'll have is to be able to move forward in an informed way. And, you know, unfortunately, there are different people in this world with different motivations sometimes. So, you know, in order to learn from our mistakes, everyone would have to agree what a mistake is. And in these current climates, I think we can see that even that is very difficult sometimes, even with examples that we would think would be no-brainers. So
right.
We can certainly learn from it. We need to be able to utilize history in order to move forward in an informed way.
In the discourse of social justice and, you know, everything that trying, we're all trying, really, really want to, I think majority, I should not say everybody, but majority of people are ready to move forward. We all want to see certain changes. We all recognize that many of the things that have passed in history are just wrong, right? And we want to move forward. So, you know, within that discourse of social justice and with the understanding of history and all of the social sciences, how do we use that to move forward? How can we put it all together and start that conversation that many are ready to have, or that many times turns into a single-sided conversation? You know, how do we make it fluid and open and inviting for everybody within the social sciences?
Such a good question. It's such a hard question, right? And yet it's such a fundamental question. I think that, first of all, by building a strong sense of recognition of the differential experience of different peoples, right? That's the fundamental, first of all. For me to be able to sit down with someone and talk about an issue, I can't get to a deeper level of understanding if I think that somehow I do understand. That's the first thing to say. I don't understand. I do not understand the experiences, the lived experiences, historical and current day, of Black individuals, African American individuals. My son is Mexican American. I'm not. As he grows up, I am not going to be able to understand some of the racism that he then experiences through school. And in order for me to truly help him, in order for people to truly help others, I think we have to get that out there and really embrace that. We also have to embrace, frankly, as a white female, that it's, while me personally may not have contributed to certain things, the history of my privilege has, and equally, in ways that I don't even recognize on a daily basis, my white privilege means that I'm not seeing all of the things that I may be adding to, right? So the term white privilege first came out in an article in 1989 by, and her name escapes me now, she's a gender specialist. She was talking about female and writing about female privilege for a very long time. And all of a sudden she looked around and she thought, male privilege she was talking about. And she looked around and she went, do you know, there's probably something called white privilege that my women of color that work alongside me don't have and I do have. And so she brought out this paper called Unpacking an Invisible Knapsack, or words to that effect. And it coined the term white privilege. And she listed about 33 ways in which she, as a female white professor in this institution in 1989, had privilege that she didn't realize she had, that the women of color around her didn't have access to that privilege. And by reading those, it really is mind-opening, right, to the things that you take for granted, from, you know, assuming that there are going to be characters that represent your children in children's books when you bring them off the shelf. There's a white privilege, to assuming that when you raise a question or a piece of doubt in a meeting scenario, people aren't going to question why you're raising that. When people ask you your opinion, not feeling like you're being asked because they want you to represent a whole population of people who look like you, right? Because you may be the only person that looks like that person in that room. So, you know, again, to build those conversations, I think we need to recognize that right now, a lot of onus has to be on the white community to step up and point out to other people who look like them, that's a racist statement, that isn't fair, you have white privilege there that people of color do not have. So, you know, we have to take on some of the fight, if you like, alongside populations and peoples of color who have been fighting for an incredibly long time and just not being heard. So the onus now is not just to provide lip service, but actually to step up in areas where people of color do not have the ability to step up and to step in and say, okay, actually that's uncalled for. And not because they can't speak, but because maybe they're not there. Maybe hiring practices mean that we don't have enough people of color, you know, in certain jobs and in certain levels of service in the community. So yeah, the social sciences build that foundation of understanding that everyone's experience is different and then challenge us, frankly, to employ these concepts as much as to the study of others as to the study of ourselves and to ask our question, like, what is my responsibility here? Truly, what can I do? What can't I do? What must I do?
I was reading just before we got in this conversation, a story from Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and you know, it's a short story where he basically, there's a scientist, a dad who's a scientist, and his son comes into his lab and he asks him, can I help you? Can I help you? And the dad is like, oh my gosh, how do I get rid of this boy who does not understand science, right? So he takes a map from a magazine and he breaks it apart into small pieces and he gives it to him. He's like, I know you love puzzles, so here you go. Put this puzzle together. Now he's thinking this is the whole world that he needs to put together, right? So it's going to take him days to put it together. And in just a short couple of hours, the kid comes back and he's like, here you go, dad. And, you know, it's all taped together and perfectly. And the moral of the story at the end is like, he says to him, so son, how did you put this puzzle together so quickly? And he said, when you don't know the world. And he said, well, at the back of the magazine, of the page of the magazine, there was a picture of a man. And I don't know the world, but I know the man. So I just flipped all the pieces and I started fixing the man. And once I fixed the man, I turned it around and therefore I had fixed the world. So it's a beautiful story that I was just reading before we got on this conversation. I think it's very appropriate for what you just said. You know, we need to look within ourselves, we need to look at the men first, and then once we fix the men, once we look inside ourselves, our families, then our communities, that's how we can expand and continue to fix the global reality for everybody. So thank you for bringing that up. You've mentioned criminal justice, and I don't think that we've talked a whole lot about that yet. And I definitely don't want to cut it shy, because I think it's an important part of the social sciences division. So tell us a little bit about that degree. And also, you know, with that same idea of social justice, I mean, all of the things that we're talking about today are like at the forefront of everything that's happening in the world today and right here in our community. And criminal justice, you know, we hear that the system needs to be reformed. There's a whole debate going on right now. How does all that fit within the curriculum and within what HEC is doing when looking at criminal justice?
Yeah, we're really lucky with our criminal justice faculty. I'll explain why. So a bit of context then. So social sciences and teacher education is the division. We have two pathways. We have an education pathway with all of our education degrees, which again, I'm not really the best person to speak to. We have a director or chair of education. She's great. Then we have the social sciences pathway. And in that pathway are three degrees, criminal justice, social science, and general studies. So those three degrees are designed that you can flex from social sciences into criminal justice or back from criminal justice into social sciences. They mirror one another quite well. The only reason for the other separate degree for criminal justice is that rather than just saying take 12 credits of crim, we actually want you to take quite specific courses and a few more of them. So as you go through the criminal justice degree, you are definitely taking yourself more and more toward that career application and that degree at 4 years. Now, to work in a police force in Howard County or in neighboring counties, you actually don't even need an AA degree for some counties. For Howard County, you do need the AA degree, but you don't need a bachelor's degree. But you do need to meet other requirements. You have to have a clean background record. You need to be over a 21, I want to say, but I might be wrong on that, but I think it is 21. And you need to be a citizen. So for criminal justice, there are a lot of courses that feed into the program from social sciences, but there are lots of specific courses around practical applied policing as well, conflict resolution, street law, corrections, some very specific tailored courses to the criminal justice system. We have two full-time faculty and then a handful of adjuncts that have been long-term with us. And this is where your question about applied experience comes in. Our first full-time faculty member, Dr. Evelyn Del Rosario, is a JD. She's a lawyer, former lawyer, had her own practice. She comes from the sort of law angle. Our second full-time professor, Dr. Eric Clark, actually was a US Marshal for most of his career. And he took early retirement, got his PhD in criminal justice, and has come to teach. So we have two kind of prongs there represented by those two faculty. And they actually have quite different takes on the criminal justice system because it is a multifaceted system. And depending on where you've worked in it, kind of shapes your approach to it sometimes. And then within the suite of other adjuncts, we have people who are still actively working within that career field as well. So, criminal justice is a really rich degree program. We actually this fall have to do a Constitution Day event every September, and we're thinking this year of doing a panel discussion on police funding, funnily enough, and the pros and cons of the different debates around defund the police and the practicalities of that and what that truly means and things like that. So look out for that through Instagram, Social Sciences Instagram, and through messaging by email. But it's a really good foundation, whether you want to end up in the police or whether you want to. We've had several students go on to 4 years, get internships with the FBI and are now working with the FBI. I know of two students who've been able to do that, or into something like law as a graduate program.
You know, I think criminal justice and I think CSI. That's what comes to my mind. So let's unpack that a little bit, because I think that there is a lot of people in the same boat with me, you know, where it's like, does it really work like that? Is it really that intense?
Well, anyway, because archaeology, people think bones, the TV show. So you can get into a CSI track degree. So the answer to that is if you want to work in CSI, you need to start looking at the 4-year schools and where their CSI is placed. Some 4-year schools have a crime scenes investigation or a forensic a criminal justice degree within a criminal justice program. And what they'll want for you to transfer in is courses along our criminal justice track. In other schools, they're gonna have that CSI criminal justice as part of a kind of chemistry degree or as a part of a sciences degree. And then effectively you're kind of minoring in criminal justice on the side. I have a colleague who works at the morgue, the county coroner's office in Baltimore City. And she does a lot of the autopsy testing to find out how people died, what drugs, etc. And her degree is pure chemistry. But if you want to work for the police and be dusting down for fingerprints, that's more of a criminal justice line. So the answer to your question there is, find out which 4-year program interests you and then look at what they're indicating the path is. Is it criminal justice or is it more pure science? And for a lot of our students, they'll take general studies. What they'll do to give themselves options is they'll say, okay, well, I'm going to be a general studies degree, which really just allows you to pull in the courses with help from an advisor that will allow you to keep your options open. So you could bring in a few criminal justice classes, the science classes you need, end up with a general studies degree. And I think for a long time, students have undervalued general studies as a degree. Yes, it says general, but it doesn't mean that you have just been, you know, willy-nilly in picking things. It should really say tailored degree, right? Because it allows you to tailor your first 2 years. If you've got a really clear sense of where you want to go and what you're going to need to get there, which you can get from the web, then you can tailor that degree and move forward like that.
You know, you've been mentioning transferring, and it sounds like it's a really big deal, and it's a really big part of the decision that a student should definitely consider before coming in and start taking classes at HCC. Let's talk a little bit more about that and you know, how easy it is to transfer, or why is it important, you know, to know where you want to go, or as you're taking your classes and you're deciding what your track's going to be while you're at HCC, why you should already have those other 2 years already in mind, right, to make that easier.
And it's pressured, right? Like I'm going back to my days and thinking like, oh, the pressure of knowing what I want to do. The answer is you don't have to know what you want to do, but you should understand a bit about how transfer works. And I'd really recommend working with advising. Our advisors are awesome. I actually started off doing part-time advising when I first came here. So the first thing to know is that HCC has a really good set of solidly transferable courses. So be aware that community colleges will offer courses that are specific to a career after 2 years. And those are the ones that don't tend to transfer so well. So you'll know if you're in a career degree, you know, you might be in a nursing or an allied health program or something like that. But if you know you want to transfer, the first thing is to make sure that the courses you're taking are good, solid gen ed courses or part of a transfer program, okay? Now within Maryland, there's a great site called Artsis. .md, I think it is, A-R-T-S-Y-S, Articulation Systems for the University of Maryland. And so any school within Maryland that's a public institution has degree paths there. So you can go to RTP, so log into Artsis, A-R-T-S-Y-S, and then pick recommended transfer programs for the institution you're thinking about and pick the degree that you want to do, and it will tell you the ideal 60 credits that you could get from HCC in order to take to go there. So you might want to end up tailoring a general studies degree with a few schools in mind, or you may know absolutely that you want to be a sociology major, so you're going to do social sciences at HCC, cluster sociology classes, and then actually those programs are designed with our 4 years in state in mind. So, you know, you probably don't have to worry too much. If you're going out of state, that's where you do need to do a little bit more pre-work and contact and reach out to those schools and have a look at what they need. But they're getting really good at this now, at providing transfer students a list of the core courses that they're really looking for within your first 60 credits. So if you don't know where you're going, but you think you're generally staying in Maryland, or you'd be happy to stay within the Maryland system, then just follow one of our transfer degrees, because we've done a lot of that pre-work for you. If you know you're going outside of state, then a little bit more work on you to check which courses are going to be the best courses. And it may mean that you go from a specific degree into a general studies degree to give you that flexibility of creating a degree program. But make sure you are in a degree program, because you can't just take 60 credits of anything and earn a degree. You need your gen ed core, and then you need certain numbers of different electives. So follow the general studies path if you are going to that more tailored format.
And then for students who are really looking to just complete their 2 years and join in the workforce, what are some of the options within social studies for them?
Okay, so obviously we've talked about policing and criminal justice, so there's one. Within the social sciences, it's a little trickier to end up in your discipline after 2 years. Most of our degrees require a minimum of 4 years, most of our job fields that we move into. If you want to specifically work as a geographer with the applied physics lab, or as an economist for the government, or if you want to work on someone's campaign, most of those types of jobs need or require that bachelor's degree. One thing that students can do is actually go onto one of the job search websites, one of the job engines, because what you can do is pretend you're there. So pretend you're looking for the job you want now. Go on, how much does it pay? What are they looking for in terms of qualifications and experience? There you go, that's what you're aiming for now. So most of our disciplines do require transfer, but you can take a pause between your AA and transfer. You could think about going part-time. And what I would say is an AA degree in social sciences will tell any employer that you are good at communication, you're good at writing, they're writing intensive classes, you understand different backgrounds and cultures, and that you've got a foundation in being able to recognize and work with people with different experiences. You're good at writing, often technical writing, you're a strong reader. You know, there are these general skills that I definitely think you can garner from a social sciences AA.
So even if you cannot land that ideal job that you want, it's definitely a good way to open that door within that career that you want to pursue by just having, you know, your degree from HEC. And then, you know, maybe it's because of financial, maybe it's because of, I mean, life just has so many ways sometimes to just kind of like slow us down on our tracks, right? But that doesn't mean that you have to stop. I mean, it means, you know, you just need to figure out, you know, how to maneuver
and
it at the
so
time.
So many of our students actually use internships as an avenue into part-time work while they finish their bachelor's. The value of internships is huge. So many non-government organizations, government organizations, social work establishments, so many people look for social sciences students for internships. And once you've established yourself there and got the internship, often you'll find that there's paid work while you finish on your 4 year. You know, the people in your field have gone through the same path as you, so they know the value of that. So definitely look for internships as you pursue your 2 year degree.
You've mentioned briefly earlier about, you know, now that we are learning online and that, and I know HEC also released just recently, you know, different types of programming that they're going to continue to offer in the fall. Within that plan, you know, how is the social sciences division looking at the fall semester upcoming?
I'm glad you asked this. So we have three delivery formats for fall. We have hybrid, which is a combination of online and some face-to-face instruction. Those are a limited selection of classes for which we had to provide face-to-face time on campus for competency demonstrations. So it might be some sciences with labs. It's a lot of health sciences courses as well, like cardiovascular tech and things like that. So that's a few classes, but by no means the majority. The majority are going to be delivered online in one of two methods: scheduled remote or flexible online. For the scheduled remote classes, you'll see in your schedule that there's days and times of the week. And that means that you're going to be logging on to Zoom, to another medium, to in real time, like we are right now, have instruction, do discussions, do group work. So if your class is, say, online, but they have, or scheduled remote, and they have times, you're in a scheduled remote class. You're expected to be there on these days at these times. And your instructor through the Canvas site and syllabi will explain further what that means for you in reality, but that's a scheduled remote delivery format. The other format is flexible online. This means that your faculty will likely still be using Zoom and video conferencing, and they may even say, like, I'm going to do my lectures on Monday at 9 if you want to join me. But they're recording everything and they're posting everything. And it's really down to you as to whether you join them in real time or do that work on your own a schedule. Of course, those classes still have due dates that you have to meet and things like that. But the actual interaction piece and the lecture piece is asynchronous. It's more flexible. So for social sciences, we are a combination of scheduled remote and flexible online courses. We have no hybrids whatsoever because the college really is looking out for the health and safety of students and of faculty and of staff. And so we said, what do we have to have on campus for fall? What do we need to do, you know, need to provide that system for? And what can we actually do in a remote way? We are confident in our faculty and their ability to engage students in a remote way. And so, you know, for fall, we made the decision that health and safety first. We don't know when the second wave, if or when it's going to come. So we need to be able to make sure our students can progress and make sure they're engaged, but keep them safe.
Absolutely. So, you know, while we continue to social distance, how do, you know, students or anybody who's listening and watching right now and has questions and they want to learn more, how do they get in touch with you or with anybody else at the Social Sciences Division?
Great. Well, my email is L for Laura and then Cripps, C-R-I, P for Peter, P for Peter, S for Simon at howardcc.edu. So you can email me. I may forward your emails to certain people depending on what it's on, but you can always reach out to me. If you go to the website, you've got our phone number is 443-518-1620 and people are getting back to you within 24 hours if you leave a message there. Instagram. At SOCSI, at HCC SOCSI. So HCCSOCSCI, at HCC SOCSI is our Instagram. We post on Instagram our events and our upcoming pathway events and a few sort of meet your faculty kind of things. And there's also a social sciences newsletter. So if you're a major, in social sciences as your degree, then we have your emails all collated into one mailing, at your HCC emails. And at the start of every main semester, fall and spring, you'll get a newsletter from your dean. Now, I'm actually the exiting dean. On July 1st, I start a new job. So the new incoming dean is Dr. Philip Velado. He is a sociologist, and the new acting, he's the acting dean, and the new acting associate dean is Dr. Young Yu. She's a geographer. So they're going to be the new leadership team for social sciences starting July 1st.
So many changes, many things to look forward to in the social sciences division. Before we wrap our conversation up today, is there anything else that you would like to add, anything else either about the social sciences or anything that we've talked about today that you'd just like to leave with our listeners and our viewers today?
I think I just want to, first of all, I want to thank you for having me on. This has been a really great chat. I want to thank our students because you are really why everyone at HCC works as hard as they do. We love you. You're great. You're a brilliant group of students, and you care about your education, and we care about your education. So I just want to say to any students who are unsure about fall or struggling in a summer class, we have so many resources for you, and please don't ever feel shy to raise your hand to anyone at HCC and say, I need help, or I need guidance, or I need something. Because truthfully, the group of people that I work with, faculty and staff at HCC, are the best people, and they truly are united around your success. So don't feel alone, particularly at this time of COVID. We're here to support you.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.
We need you to continue wearing masks, physically distancing, washing hands, and getting tested. But the stress from COVID-19 also impacts our mental health. Many of us are struggling, feeling isolated and alone. Please check in on a neighbor and lend a helping hand. If you or someone you know needs food, help paying rent, or just someone to talk to, visit our website today. Together, we will beat COVID.